Hey, thank you for joining us this evening, folks. You know, many of us have been glued to developments in the Charlie Kirk assassination story. I, for one, I've been watching Candace Owens religiously get hundreds of thousands of views in her live streams talking about this stuff. She said she's going to break the gag order. And the mainstream media has just reported an absolute crock of government false narrative, I believe. Go throughout history, you see these assassinations, JFK, etc. Mainstream media puts out their version. Government backs it up. Case closed. But in this day of the internet and sleuths and military experts, they can't get away with this stuff. So it's huge thank you to Range Day for coming on and giving us his expertise on this subject. And we've got Range Day's links in the description box. Shane's put the hyperlinks in by now, hopefully. And I urge people to subscribe and support what Range Day is doing. So when you first saw the video of the assassination, I mean, what went through your mind initially?
Yeah, so thank you for having me, Sean. I really appreciate it. And just to be clear, I am no ex-military. I'm not ex-police. I'm just a guy who shoots a lot. So I don't want to mislead anybody. I'm not out here trying to pretend to be something I'm not. However, I don't think it takes a military expert. I don't think it takes someone in law enforcement to see, you know, exactly what you're seeing with your own two eyes, which the government wants you to ignore, you know, the proof and the evidence you're seeing with your own two eyes. But I remember exactly where I was sitting. I was sitting on this computer here, editing a video, a gun review video, which is what I typically do on the channel. It's only recently I've dived into, I guess you want to call it conspiracy or calling out what I would call blatant lies. But I was editing a gun review on my computer, as I've always done on the channel. And I remember my wife sent me a link and said Charlie Kirk was shot. And I opened it up and I could never have imagined what I was about to see. Because when you hear like Charlie Kirk shot, you read the headline, you're like, okay, is he okay? What's going on? And then I click the video and I literally watched him perish on camera. And that was one of the most traumatic things I've seen in my lifetime. And I think the craziest part about it was how many countless other people who aren't in the Second Amendment space or who have never seen war, have never seen death in that way, saw it right there in front of your faces, saw him perish. And the first thing I thought was, wow, this country is in a lot of trouble. That's the first thing I thought initially. And then, like many people, it was weird because I kept watching it over and over again to try to figure out what I was seeing. And then, you know, I don't remember exactly how many days later it was the FBI came out with their official narrative that they found the shooter and where he had been shot from. But the first thing I thought was that that's an exit wound. And I think a lot of people shared that opinion. A lot of people who shoot, who've hunted before, as I mentioned, you don't need to have, you know, have bodies on you or be some high tier Delta operator to understand what an entry and exit wound looks like. If you've ever shot a deer, if you've ever hunted anything in your life, you know that an entry wound is very small. Typically on a furry animal like a deer, you have to move the fur aside. You have to look for an entry wound. And the exit wound is again, the gushing, the blood, the exit wound is typically much larger. You know what I mean? And I have posted videos of this. I've broken down this analysis, obviously on live stream on YouTube. We can't show much. We can't even handle pew-pews on camera. Otherwise they'll take it down. So unfortunately I can't bring all the receipts like I have in my past videos, but I urge people again, if you want to go see that, go check it out. I would appreciate it at Range Day Bro is all the socials. But the first thing I thought was this country is in a lot of trouble. I felt immediate empathy for his loved ones. And I felt like the First Amendment had been directly attacked. I felt like what this country stood for was being attacked, because whether you like Charlie or not, and I'll be the first to admit, I was not a huge follower of Charlie Kirk, a fan of his. I do agree with a lot of his points. I disagree with some. Was he abrasive? Maybe to some, again, but it doesn't matter. None of that matters at all. What matters is in this country, we have the First Amendment and we have the Second Amendment. And for someone, if you don't like somebody's beliefs, go ahead and debate him. That's exactly what he was presenting the opportunity for these people to do. And he was cut down in cold blood in his prime. And that pissed me off. That really got my blood boiling, because I saw what I saw on Charlie Kirk, what I saw happen to him could happen to anybody, left, right, center, doesn't matter who you are. If if the conversation stops and people start picking up guns, which most people don't even understand what that actually means, what civil war, what that actually looks like. People who are calling for that have no clue what they're actually asking for. But again, once the conversation, the dialogue stops, that's when the violence erupts. And I saw that as a direct attack on America. And we saw shortly thereafter, everybody, whether they were involved or not, I'm not going to imply that I know anything. Again, I'm just using basic logic and reasoning, common sense, to come to a lot of the conclusions that I've come to and formulate the theories that I've formulated with the help of a lot of other people on the internet, like Candace and so many others. But I thought, you know, you saw immediately certain parties, everybody, the left was using it to push gun control. The right was using it to further radicalize their base and rally their base to get things through, push more big brother type activities and things getting pushed through. We saw the Epstein vote go through, you know, what was it, just a few hours or a few moments after Charlie was assassinated, they voted to not release the Epstein file. So everybody was quick to utilize this tragedy to their advantage. Meanwhile, the rest of us are just like, what just happened? And we're looking to the FBI, and that's where the BS started, right?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. Well said. All right. So just considering the shot then. So you're saying that your instinct, you thought it was an exit wound that came out here. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So go ahead. I'm sorry, yeah. Sean.
No, go on. If you can expand on that, that'd be great.
I'm very eager to talk about it because, look, I mean, let me preface this by saying, you know, I'm a millennial. I grew up, for better or for worse, listening to Alex Jones. I don't believe in a lot of the lies that the government's told us from a very young age. I mean, I wasn't around during JFK, but I believe we're living through, as you mentioned, a JFK 2.0 situation. So, and on top of all that, we have declassified documents that prove the CIA and the FBI and the United States government have performed false flag operations on American soil and abroad to get us into wars and to drive their agenda, to regime change, so on and so forth. So we have proof of this. This is, you know, we don't have concrete proof of 9/11 because that was just 25 short years ago, but we have concrete proof of, you know, declassified documents talking about the Gulf of Tonkin incident. I mean, so many others. Again, I've covered this on my channel and so many other channels have as well. So from that perspective, when I saw what happened to Charlie, my gut instinct told me, okay, that's an exit wound. We saw immediate and massive amounts of hemorrhaging from his neck. And I knew right then he was gone. There was no, his soul left his body instantly, which gives me some peace that he didn't have to suffer. But regardless of that, the first thing I think is, okay, boom, you see him get shot, you see the hemorrhaging, that's an exit wound, okay? Now, it wasn't until a few days later when I started analyzing things frame by frame, and when a few friends of mine had reached out, one of them was a Marine Corps guy, and I show him in my video that went really viral, a lot of people who probably know my name was from that video, I show him there, and he's all bloodied up. He did some tours overseas, and he's been shot. And I saw it on his Instagram story and I said, hey man, do you mind if I share this? Cause that was what I believed to be the smoking gun at the time. And I'll take a step back and explain this to everybody. So I initially thought that's an exit wound. So where could he have been shot from? Well, he has a backdrop behind him. Most likely for me, if I'm executing this shot, like somebody who knows ballistics, I'm not a sniper. I've never been on deployments, but I hang out, I shoot with a lot of these guys. I shoot with the best in the world, PRS shooters. I go to these matches. Anybody will tell you where Tyler Robinson is alleged to have been perched up is much less than ideal. And from people doing tours of the university, one that I think of recently, one guy who actually defends narrative from everything that I've seen, Paramount Tactical, he walked the university and he actually showed how easily you could get up to the spot that Tyler Robinson was alleged to have been at to take the shot. Now, again, getting off into the weeds a little bit, I'm not saying Tyler Robinson wasn't there. I'm not saying he wasn't up there with a rifle. I have no idea. What I'm trying to analyze is what I saw day one, footage that I know wasn't doctored, right? Or at least I presume wasn't doctored because we saw it day one. The more and more time that goes on, the easier it is to doctor and plant false information, which we have to be very careful about. But that is the least ideal spot to be straight on. You're exposed on a rooftop. You really have no cover. Yeah, you're a little ways away, but it's a very bad place to be. And so I started looking at the area, the surrounding areas. It is like a sniper's dream, that location. I mean, he's literally surrounded by rooftops. And the fact that his security team, the university, didn't have one drone up in the air kind of blows my mind a little bit. But also, there's still tons of camera footage that hasn't been released by the FBI or the university that could give us some insight or give us a few more clues at least. But my initial thought is you always want to be set back. And if you could be set back as far as possible, either in a shaded area when it's bright outside, even better. But there's one particular location, which I point out on my channel, which is directly to his back right. There's a little, probably a foot wide crack between the buildings, between the balcony and the balcony that I originally had alleged the shooter might have been on. Again, I was just spitballing there in that video. I should have used more clear terms. But that is the spot I think would be most advantageous, because you're shooting through a crack and it lines up with the bullet trajectory that I believe happened. I believe that Charlie was shot still in his back right. And again, that smoking gun evidence that I thought I had, which I thought I had seen blood splatter coming out of the back right of Charlie's head. It turned out that was his necklace that had snapped off and flung up. A lot of people were alleging early on it was an earpiece, but we've confirmed it's not an earpiece. It is a necklace. And I'll be the first to go back and you know, reanalyze this information if I get new information. But after that, after we discovered it was his necklace, new footage came out later on. I believe it was Blake Betnards, I forget his name, on X. Purchased some footage and released it to the public. And in that camera footage, you can see for one frame, you can see the cavitation event that happens in Charlie's neck. And again, it's so hard to explain this without showing the receipts here, but, and, you know, to not get taken down, we can't. But essentially what happens, if you've ever watched like Ballistic High Speed, I really love those guys. It's a great channel. When you watch a bullet enter ballistics gelatin, and what ballistics gelatin is created with a specific consistency, the FBI has come up with this formula. Again, the FBI's ballistic testing lab, they're the foremost experts in this. So they come up with a formula for this ballistics gel that will mimic as closely as possible human tissue. And when you see a bullet, a 5.56, it doesn't really matter what bullet. The bigger and larger and the more energy the bullet has, the more damage is done. But even with a 5.56, an AR-15, typical AR-15 round, which, you know, Democrats or anti-gun people will claim is a massive round, it's not. It's 55 grains. It's tiny. It's a 22 diameter bullet. Those bullets will expand that ballistic gelatin upwards of 8 to 12 inches, depending on the load and the velocity and the barrel length and all these things that play into the factors. But it'll expand that ballistic gelatin, and you can watch it at 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 frames per second, thanks to these high-speed camera guys. And you could see exactly what happens to that flesh, right? That's to mimic human flesh. And when you see this new footage that Blake put out, it completely explained to me exactly how that chain flying off happened, because you can see Charlie's entire shirt, and certain angles will show the shirt puffing up in the back first, and then you see the shirt linger in the front. And we can go through, I don't know how gruesome and how much autistic detail you want me to get into it as far as explaining the shirt movement, but and I do intend to recreate it, so we could talk about that a little bit later as well. I do intend to attempt to recreate it. But when we saw that frame of that cavitation event, and you see Charlie's neck and chest balloon out as that gel block does, it couldn't have been more clear to me that that's exactly what happened. People were trying to explain the chain breaking by potentially the bullet coming from Tyler Robinson, hitting the chain and then ricocheting up. There's so many, like, this is the problem, Sean. I don't even know where to start with the issues. 30-06, get out of my face, okay? I am willing to entertain a story about him being shot from the front with a 5.56, or even a 5.56 seems extremely unlikely for me. Again, going back to gel blocks, granted there's no bones in gel blocks, but 5.56 coming out of even a 10.3 or 11-inch barrel, which, for those who don't know, the shorter the barrel, the less velocity the round has, which means the less energy it has and the less penetration potential it has. Also, grain weights play into this, again, without getting super autistic into it. Even these shorter barreled rifles that you're shooting with a 5.56, a much smaller caliber, are going to penetrate upwards of 12 to 16 to 18 inches of gel block at times. And if you're talking about a 30-06, I've seen videos of guys recreating from years past and from recent times because of the Charlie Kirk assassination, recreating these gel block tests with a 30-06, and they're penetrating upwards of 30 inches in gel block. Again, and I've seen guys that I respect, guys who are ex-special forces like Valhalla VFT, shout out to him, put together all types of mediums to shoot 30-06 from 140 yards, including and up to steel plates, quarter inch, three-eighths inch, and half inch steel plates, all of which were penetrated by the 30-odd-6 round at 140 yards. And he also recreated it with like a huge piece of beef and a cow femur, which is much stronger than the human neck, obviously, and then beef behind it. And I mean, this round, the 30-odd-6, just get out of my face with that. Like, if you want me to entertain a story, let's talk in reality a little bit. Let's talk like this is America. People shoot guns here. People know what happens when you hit a deer with a 30-odd-6 or you hit a deer with even a much smaller caliber. It's blowing through a deer's shoulder, its heart, its lungs, and coming out the other shoulder. I mean, and a deer is a much tougher animal than the human. And the human neck is what, 5.5-6 inches deep on a big man. Like, so if the FBI is upset, which they clearly are, you have Kash Patel going on podcasts or, you know, whatever news outlets and talking, calling people like myself and like yourself and Valhalla and Candace anarchists for simply believing what we're seeing with our own two eyes. Like, maybe you should give us a little bit more of a believable story instead of, oh yeah, some kid was radicalized on the internet. Oh yeah, and that's, by the way, that's why we need to regulate the internet. That's why we need to make sure we're silencing voices online. I mean, to me, just like every other false flag, it comes back to more governmental control, more overreach, and shutting up the people who disagree with you. It's that simple.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so, you know, when I saw it, and I saw that puffing up with the chest thing as well, are you theorizing based on that motion that the bullet went in? And you don't have to hold back. You can use as much medical language as you want. We've all got strong stomachs on this channel.
Okay. So my theory right now, again, and I'm very willing to change my mind. I'm very open-minded. Okay. My theory currently, based off of what I'm seeing, the most likely scenario for what could have happened to Charlie Kirk is that he was shot in his back right, probably somewhere near the base of his skull, at the base of his hairline. Again, I think he was shot in his hairline, because if he hadn't been, I think we would see something on his skin. If he was shot directly in his ear or just behind his ear, I think we would see something. I don't think we'd see blood splattering out, coming out like we did on the exit wound in the front, but I think we might see a little dot, which is what an entry wound typically looks like. Usually you have like even like a little singe mark, like burns, almost like you put a cigarette out is what it might look like, but even smaller than a cigarette would be. So my most likely theory, the one that I'm leaning towards most, the one that I'm going to attempt to recreate, is that he was shot in this back right from that perch top that I was talking about, where the sniper would have been set back out of sight from everybody. And that bullet traveled down through his neck, causing that cavitation that we saw throughout his neck and his upper chest area. And that, I'll use my chain as an example. I think Charlie's might have been a little bit longer than my chain, and it was also a little skinnier and silver, but we'll use this as an example. So if Charlie was shot back here, the bullet exits right around here, is typically approximately where we saw the wound, where he was bleeding from, okay? This would have caused a massive cavitation, as we can see when we watch ballistic gel tests in super high-speed cameras. Regular iPhone, 60 or 30 frames per second, is not gonna pick that up. What we saw was the shirt lingering, right? The flesh expands and contracts just like the gel does almost instantly. I mean, in 10,000 frames per second, it happens in a matter of, again, at 10,000 frames per second, it happens in a matter of seconds, like 1 or 2 seconds. So you can imagine, you're never going to see it with the human eye. You're not going to catch it on an iPhone. But what we saw was the shirt lingering, and what we saw on the front. So again, I believe the whole shirt expansion in every direction happened at the same time. I think due to the frame rate and the way phones and things record, we might have caught glimpses of it. What a lot of people were alleging was his microphone exploding. Here I have the DJI. I'll just use this as an example. What a lot of people were alleging, and I know we're getting off topic real quick. This is just the way it goes with me, brother. I'm all over the place a little bit. But what we saw with his microphone, I believe it was on the right side of his chest here. You even saw a little bit of motion blur when the microphone jumped up, and it looked like a little half moon right here. People were alleging that was smoke from the microphone exploding. Again, to me, it's very clear. If you understand videography or video at all, you understand that that's not what that was. That was just motion blur from a slow frame rate and an object moving extremely fast. So I think most likely what happened is he was shot in his back right. You see the cavitation, his shirt expands. Now his cross is also expanding to the point where it snaps. He has a cross on his chain, and this is all underneath his shirt. So I'll now put this underneath my shirt to demonstrate. But his cross is now moving in an upward trajectory from that expansion. So we see everything expand. The cross is moving upward already, right? Because the chest is expanding up and out. His cross is now moving up and out. It snaps. His cross has more mass than the rest of his chain. It snaps somewhere here in the front, clearly, because you can see the amount of chain that swings around the left side, or I guess it's Charlie's right. I'm doing everything backwards because I'm watching myself here. The amount of necklace that swings around Charlie's back right is fairly long. I mean, it's pretty long, and that's what I originally believed to be blood spatter coming out of the back right. Now, that necklace swings up and back and off, and this cross lingers up. Why? Because it's Newtonian law of physics. Objects in motion will stay in motion, and this thing has more mass than the rest of this chain. If it snaps here in the front, it's already moving in this direction, and that's when we see that shirt linger up by Charlie's face. Next, what happens is you see the shirt come back down. About this point in time, you see Charlie's neck being pulled. You see a projectile, in my humble opinion. My belief is it's the projectile, or it could be bone. It could be debris from his neck being blown literally apart. But I believe it was projectile poking through his skin. And whether or not the projectile had already passed through, again, this goes back to the frame rates. Like, whether or not the projectile passed through, if you watched, again, some of the ballistic high-speed footage that I cover on my channel, you can see bullets exit the ballistic dummy gel, and you see that gel takes a moment. It lags behind the bullet exiting before it retracts, and, you know, you have that ripple motion. But then right after that, you also see either a blood stain or a hole in the shirt itself as well. You see a dark circle on his shirt corresponding with the exact location that bullet had appeared to pierce through his skin. And then just a split second later, the immense amount of hemorrhaging happens. The other thing, there's other points that I'll mention that I, again, covered in that video, but there's a lot of other evidence pointing that direction, okay? What people don't get, is it possible that Charlie's body reacted the way it did from a front shot? Absolutely, it's possible. Is it extremely likely? I'd say it's as good as my theory, which is that he was shot from his back right, because when you see the motion of Charlie's head, it does snap down and to the left slightly. His hair takes a moment to catch up. You can see his hair jolts up. And so in that moment, this is, again, a bullet, whether it was a 55 grain 5.56 bullet or it was a 168 grain 308 or 170 grain 30-06, 175 grain, we're talking about a very small weight, okay? 175 grain, I don't know what – I mean – I really don't even know what that would equate to in like pounds or ounces. Like, it's such a small amount. I wish someone could convert that in the comments and let me know. But even a heavy bullet, like 175 grain bullet, is extremely lightweight. The human body, how much did Charlie weigh? That emotion, what the bullet's designed to do is hit the target, dump all of its energy into the target. And depending on the bullet, some bullets are designed to stay in the target, but they're designed to maintain as much weight as possible, typically. Because that's going to get you much more penetration, right? Again, 30-06 is a round that's been used for centuries, for a long, long time, since World War I, as they allege this gun was from, like, you know, a war relic from his grandfather, to hunt big game. And that bullet is designed to dump as much energy as possible, maintain as much weight as possible, because when it maintains more weight, it passes through, it gets more penetration, which is what you want on a big game rifle, right? But even a 5.56, I think it was a 5.56, or something similar, right? That bullet's gonna whiz right through, and that amount of time it takes to go through this amount of tissue, it's not gonna push him over like a linebacker coming and hitting him. You know what I mean? It's not gonna do that. What it's gonna do is it's gonna snap him down. And you saw Charlie, his head snapped down to the left, okay? And could you explain that from a front shot? Yeah, because he's getting hit here. Maybe that's the reaction from him getting hit here. Again, I'm not saying I know anything, but what I know is that it's for people to say it's impossible for his body to move in that way, from being shot from the back right, you just don't understand how fast bullets are moving and how little they actually weigh. That bullet went through him, dumped all of its energy, and I believe exited right out of the front of his neck and was on the ground that was conveniently paved over just hours, you know, what was it, 48 hours later, which, again, there's just so many little things that are sus about this situation, as the kids say. It's not any one thing. It's like we have dozens and dozens and dozens of inconsistencies. And so you look at the way his head moved. He also, people were saying, how did he fall backwards? Charlie's center of gravity, he was sitting on a low back chair, by the way. I'm sitting in a high back chair. It's a little more difficult to you know, recreate this. He's sitting in a low back chair, and you can see his position. He's kind of slumped forward. So his center of gravity is already leaning back into the chair, but his shoulders are kind of slumped forward. And when he's hit, his head goes down to the right, and the reaction to that, I mean, he immediately starts to fall to his left. You can see him fall to his left right after. I mean, the security guy does grab him and eventually toss him onto the ground. a moment there later, but you can see Charlie's already drifting to his left. So people say he fell straight back. He didn't. I mean, if you watch the footage enough times, I unfortunately have watched it more than anyone should ever have to, because I'm, again, analyzing this from a ballistic perspective, but I don't see any evidence that shows that he would, like the motion of his body to me proves more that he was shot from his back right. The last thing I'll mention, and I think this is very important information, is that Charlie's head reacts and moves, and his hair movement happens, and as you see his face, you see him tense up several frames before you see the exit wound. Okay, and my neck's all red now, which is great, so I don't have to keep pinching. You can see where I'm talking about. Several frames before you see that bullet poking through and the exit wound emerge, you see his head do this, you see his hair jolt up, and you see his face react to the shot. So I don't know how people explain that away. I guess you could say, well, you're Range Day, bro, you're using the frame rate as an example to prove your argument, and you could use the same example, you could use the same to debate your argument, right? Or say, well, hey, the bullet's traveling so fast, it hit him in the neck, and then the shirt went up first, and then you saw it after the shirt came down. But even after the shirt came down, if you're watching it frame by frame, the exit wound's not there until another frame later. So how can you explain Charlie's entire body reacting, his entire neck having that cavitation event all before the exit wound emerges? How can you explain that? I mean, again, I'm not asking anybody to, you know, Occam's razor, right? Usually the simplest explanation is the correct one. I'm not asking anybody to do mental jujitsu to make this theory work. I'm actually just asking you to believe what you're seeing. And if you look at it frame by frame, that's what I'm seeing. And I think 6.5 million other people who watch my video agree with that. And I just don't understand how the detractors, the people who are, I don't want to call them shilling for the government, because who knows if they're actually shilling or if they actually just don't want to believe their own eyes. But I just don't know, how could you debate that? How could you debate that Charlie reacts, starts to move, you see the cavitation, and then you see the exit wound again? And people are like, well, you yourself, and I'm going to play devil's advocate. Like, I myself am saying bullets move extremely fast, right? How could it be several frames on a 30 frame per second video before you see the exit wound emerge? Well, as much as this is just a little bit of tissue, bullets slow down when they hit things as well. They slow down quite a bit. And I don't know, I'm not claiming to know what the exit velocity of the bullet was when it left his neck. I'm not claiming to even say that's 100% what happened. But as far as my eyes can tell, as far as using common sense, again, you don't need to be an expert in ballistics. Do you understand? Have you shot a gun before? Have you thrown a ball before? I mean, there's only one way that physics works. And the way the FBI is telling the story, it just doesn't seem believable at all to me.
Wow, you covered a lot of ground there, my friend. And there's a lot of interest in this. You've had tons of questions come in. A few people have asked this question similar to Jane. If that was the exit wound, where do you think the bullet would have ended up?
Look, I don't know anything. My best guess is that if that was the bullet actually exiting the front of his neck, it would have landed somewhere at the feet, somewhere on the ground underneath the tents. Somewhere in that grassy area. And again, it could be anything. It could be a bone fragment. I've seen some other clips since, you know, again, in recent times, I have to question everything I'm seeing now. AI is unbelievable. I actually just recently started messing with AI video apps, and it's quite astonishing. It's quite terrifying, actually, what you can do with just a simple prompt. So I undoubtedly, people who have ill will, people in the government who have, you know, careers to protect and want to stay out of prison forever, if this is indeed a cover up, if they're involved, I mean, undoubtedly they have far greater technology as far as artificial intelligence goes. So I'm questioning everything I'm seeing nowadays, especially. I think there's been a huge push, rightfully so, to find original video files and find original metadata for the videos that we're seeing, because it's just way too easy to fake something and sway the public narrative. But I mean, to answer your question, I think it's at his feet somewhere. Also, There is a new photo that someone sent me in my email, so shout out to one of my subscribers, that showed a little bulge in Charlie's shirt that you can only see for one or two frames, that appears to have something that maybe slid down his shirt. The shirt may have even caught the bullet, just the way it had been sitting there. Again, I don't know for sure, but it is peculiar that they paved over the ground within, I mean, what, a day or two after the shooting. I thought that place would be encased in glass for months.
All right, question from L. Horton. Could the wound have come from the actual cross being forced into his neck when the chain broke?
Okay, good question. I briefly covered this in one of my videos because this theory has kind of broken out lately. What I want to illustrate is really quickly, if what I'm alleging is true, right, and the cavitation event sends his neck expanding and his upper chest expanding in every direction and sends his cross swinging up this way, right? Again, I mentioned Charlie's chain. I believe it looked like it was longer than this chain, okay? So you can see where this chain's sitting on my chest. If it swung up in this direction, it would have had to take a 90-degree turn to then go into his neck. Now, again, I'm not saying I know for sure if it's true or not. I just think it's extremely unlikely that his cross decided to come up from that expansion and then boom, snap right into his neck. Maybe you can make the argument when the chain snapped, you know, because it snapped. I believe it snapped up here, and that's what sent this. I'm doing it backwards again. That's what sent this chain going over his head. If you want to argue that the chain snapped and then it pulled it back into his neck, I mean, again, I think you're really trying to do some mental jiu-jitsu to make that claim happen. I just don't think that's really likely, especially also if the chain snaps, what's holding that cross on that chain any longer? It's going to fly right off the edge of the chain if it still has any type of velocity, right?
Question from Jeff. Should the exit wound not be a lot bigger, especially given it must have been a high velocity sniper round?
Okay, so velocity... Okay, I have to be careful because there's so many different bullet designs and every bullet has a specific task, right? There is Hornady Critical Duty, which is my home defense caliber of choice, round of choice, bullet of choice. It's designed to dump as much energy as possible, expand as much as possible, and to limit penetration because in a home defense scenario, you don't want to shoot through your walls, right? There are so many different bullet types. So to say high velocity sniper round, okay, what is a sniper then? Now we're talking, again, and for people who, please don't take this the wrong way, but you want to talk about an autistic group of people. Like the long range sniper community, the long range shooting community is, and I mean that in the nicest way possible, but these guys hand load everything down to the individual grain of powder that they're putting into the cartridge. They check their velocities and everything. So we can get into a conversation again, based off the sound that I heard, which I hear that sound all the time when I'm shooting, right? And I've only done it a few times where I'll go down range and lay down behind the berm and have my buddy shoot past me so I could hear what it sounds like down range as well. And there's a couple of YouTubers who have done the same thing and recorded that audio. It sounds like a 5.56 to me. It sounds like a run-of-the-mill AR-15. That could have been a 308. Yeah, they all kind of sound the same when they're suppressed. Suppressor is not going to people call it silencer in Hollywood, made everybody think that silencers are, you know, make things Hollywood quiet. They don't. It, especially on a supersonic round, that is where the majority of the sound is coming from. It's coming from the bullet breaking the sound barrier. What I heard was a crack boom, but the crack itself was a sound barrier being broken. The boom I heard was a low tone from a suppressor. There's been a ton of sound analysis that people have done out there, way smarter people with audiophiles than myself, and they all kind of point to the direction that I believe the shot came from. So to answer this question, it is a small amount of flesh to travel through. Again, a lot of rounds are, even the rounds that are designed to expand as much as possible and fragment in a target typically don't start to fragment until 4 to 6 to 8 inches into the medium. So this is, if what I'm alleging is correct, this is not that far. This is probably like 5 inches, 5.5, 6 inches maximum. So I think that is consistent with the exit wound that we saw from a 5.56, and you know, if it was a different caliber, maybe so. If it was a 30-06 from that, I think you would have seen a bigger exit wound. But again, I think it was, you don't need a lot to kill a human being. Unfortunately, it's we're very weak animals. That's why 5.56 has been adopted by the U.S. military and been used for decades now.
Yeah, I'm just googling about Charlie Kirk autopsy because a lot of questions are coming in asking for your opinion on why no autopsy details are being released.
Well, I have no idea why they're not being released. According to Cash Patel, they don't want to fuel online conspiracy theorists. I have heard two pieces of information, one from Stephen Gardner, who alleges he heard it from TPUSA themselves, somebody high up at TPUSA, and then one from Candace Owens. The one from Stephen mentions the C2 through this T1 or the C2 through the C7 and then the T1. He claims that according to what he was told by TPUSA, that the bullet struck the C2 first, which is like the second vertebrae down. So you have your skull, the C1 and then the C2 directly underneath that, which is pretty much in line with the base of the jaw. And again, Valhalla VFT did a great video on this and I elaborated on it. But if the shot came from where the FBI says it came from, which is Charlie's front left, it would have had to gone through his jaw to hit his C2. And obviously it's not where we saw the entry wound. So again, if you're trying to explain, like for instance, let me just cover Candace's real quick. Candace alleges this was the entry wound and it did not exit. And the bullet was found back here in line with the shoulder blades. I don't want to be the guy who like cherry picks what information I believe from Candace and what information I don't, but she said 100% unequivocally factual proof that she knows 100%. And unless you go there and you were there when it happened to Charlie, I really don't think anybody can say that. And I learned my lesson about that. I made a lot of claims in my first video that this was 100% factual proof. And I learned my lesson because I thought it was a smoking gun. It turns out it was his necklace. But anyways, I don't think Candace was given true information on that, just based off, again, what everything my eyes are showing me. Now, if you want to go back to Steven's claims that he was told by TPUSA, the C2 through the T1 or the C7, I think the C7 is just above the T1. I'm not looking at a spinal chart here. But if you want to go through and try to explain that, I think it can very easily be explained by this trajectory here. Besides the bullet being lodged back here, maybe there was a fragment of the bullet which was lodged back here. That does not seem very far out of the realm of possibility. Because again, bullets do fragment, especially ones that are designed to fragment. And there's ones that are even have machine lines scored into them so that they flower petal out and they lose petals and they do more damage, right? But I think that you can explain the damage to those vertebrae but just by that cavitation. When you see what that does, it's called a temporary wound cavity is what that cavitation is. And then there's a permanent wound cavity. So the temporary wound cavity is what that violent explosion of flesh. I forget who said it. I wish I can give him credit, but I used to say this all the time in my old line of work. You've heard of an air compressor, but you've never heard of a water compressor. That's because water cannot compress. It cannot be compressed. So what happens when something traveling that fast dumps all that energy into it? It's trying to get out of the way as fast as possible. And that's what causes that temporary wound cavity and that violent expansion. It's just, boom, get out of the way because it's not able to be compressed into a small space and then, you know, dissipate it that way, right? So that's what causes that temporary wound cavity. The permanent wound cavity is the flesh that's removed essentially after that temporary cavity has then collapsed and, you know, done that little ripple thing that we could all see in high speed footage. So you can explain the damage to those vertebrae very easily by just, if we had a high speed camera on Charlie in that moment, I think we would see, you know, it's like time traveler goes back and records it with a phantom 100,000 frames per second. I think you'd see a shiny bullet coming right from his back, right? Hitting him here. You'd see his neck expand, explode, his chain break off. And then you'd see the bullet poke right through here and go into the ground.
So Milo is asking if this could be possible with an air rifle with an ice bullet. And I'm Googling ice bullet, and it doesn't seem like ice bullets are very realistic.
Okay, I want to be careful here because I don't know. And I don't want to be the guy who's like, oh, there's no way. I don't know. But does it seem extremely unlikely? Yeah, it seems pretty unlikely to me, especially when you think about the forces that are put on a bullet in order to project it that quickly, right? Like, I think it would just, I mean, unless there's some super compact ice that I'm not aware of that could withstand that amount of pressure. The other thing is, I think it's very clear we hear a supersonic crack, which would mean that the projectile, whatever it is, would have to be traveling faster than the speed of sound, which is around 1150 feet per second, depending on your altitude, so on and so forth. So I'd have to look up UVU campus and figure out what supersonic speeds are up there. But from the research that I've done, which again was somewhat minimal, and I don't have any experience with air rifles besides when I was a kid and my pellet gun, there's some pretty highfalutin air rifles out there nowadays. So is it possible? Of course, like anything's possible, but is it likely? I think it's extremely unlikely. Most of the research I saw was that most air rifles are pushing bullets at slower than the speed of sound. And again, if you're going to take out somebody, and it's not to say air rifles 100% could kill somebody, right? They're capable of inflicting, and people hunt large game with some air rifles. It's capable of taking down a human for sure. But the advantage of an air rifle is that it's not supersonic. You're not going to hear that crack. It's much more subtle. It's much quieter, you know? So why would you go through the trouble if this is a professional hit to announce, you know, your shot to the world, so to speak, and the sound of the shot, if you're going to use an air rifle? It just doesn't make sense to me. But of course it's possible.
Bex wants to know, why so little blood on the tent or the people carrying Charlie?
Okay, this is probably more of a medical question, but the way I've heard it explained, again, shouting out Valhalla VFT, one of his buddies who was a medic in the Green Beret, I believe, he talked about, is it possible that, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, so go ahead and watch that video, but a lot of people are saying that he just lost so much blood immediately that he was out of blood, I guess you could say. I don't really believe that. The more telling thing to me is that in Valhalla's video, he talks about this. Nobody's actually covered in blood. Nobody's hands have blood on them from his security detail. The people who are supposed to be administering medical aid to him and stopping the bleed, the first thing you do, and again, it doesn't take a combat medic to know this. Anybody who's worked in trauma will tell you, the first thing you do with a gunshot wound is stop the bleeding. You put pressure, you jam it with as much gauze or your t-shirt or whatever you have, right? Like whatever you got, dirt, you throw it in there, you try to stop the bleeding as quickly as possible. So that's more telling to me. Then, you know, when he was being carried away, it was weird that there's no blood drops on the floor. I do agree with that. It's strange because the amount of blood we saw immediately was like tremendous. Like it was like probably a gallon within a few seconds, you know? And, but the more concerning part to me is that none of his security detail were covered in blood in their hands, which would be the first thing you would do is go put pressure on that wound. And I mean, that it's all very weird.
So Dale wants to know your thoughts on his security team.
There's a lot of people who are alleging the security team was involved. I think at some point, depending on, look, the way I look at it is people, the messiest thing you have in the conspiracy is people, right? It's the people, the less people to know, the better. I think a lot of the things that people are claiming or accusing the security team of are natural reactions. I think that they could have done a much, much better job administering aid to Charlie. I think that a lot of their movements were consistent with like a professional security team. Like for instance, there was the guy to Charlie's right who take kind of like the shot goes off, Charlie struck, and he kind of takes a step back and like looks and reaches for his gun. That is what I would expect a professional to do in that situation. It's just weird. And again, everyone's Monday night quarterbacking or Sunday night, whatever they call it, right? Everybody's analyzing this frame by frame and stating, you know, what would I do? And this is by no means me defending them. I mean, it was a complete failure for them to not have drones up. It was a complete failure for them to not administer aid because I didn't see anybody administering aid. There was a ton of failures that you can definitely point to and criticize them for, but a lot of the reactions, there's some weird things. Like why was that guy smiling or grinning? It seemed like he was grinning. Very strange. The dude appeared to be starting recording on his glasses, the gentleman who was wearing the Ray-Ban Meta glasses. But then I watched it again in the chair when the chair flipped, when the gentleman jumped over the table, kind of bumped his glasses and it looked like he was adjusting them. So again, on second analysis, I can kind of write off a lot of this as like, okay, I think people are just looking for someone to blame. And by all means, rightfully so, because the official narrative is so unbelievable. But watching it again over and over again, I thought they were handing stuff off initially. I watched it again frame by frame. I don't really see anything being handed off. I think it's confusion, chaos. Hey, go get that. And the guy's like reaching for his hand. He's like, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? And he's like freaking out, you know? So I think there's a lot of strange things about security detail. I think they absolutely failed, whether they were implicated or not. I definitely don't believe in the palm gun theory. Again, a bullet coming out of any 9mm, even a full-size Glock 17 with a threaded barrel is not going to have the velocity to create the cavitation that we saw in that new footage, new high definition footage. So I don't think that's likely.
So is all the hand signal stuff being discredited that came out early on?
I'm not a military sniper, but like, just think about this. I think this gives it even more credibility. If me and my buddies were radicalized, putting myself in the shoes of somebody like a regular guy who is planning this assassination, like if I have the shot, I have the visual line of sight, I'm going to take the shot. And if I think it's more likely the shooter might've been listening for the question that was asked because there's speakers projecting it and you can definitely hear it from far away. I think it's more likely the shooter was just waiting for that question or the right time. But as a shooter, I'm not going to wait for some dude to give me a signal. What if Charlie moves? What if someone steps in my line of sight? What if I'm discovered? Like once I have the shot, I'm going to take the shot. If that's my goal is to take Charlie Kirk out, I'm not waiting for a signal, right? Like it, at that point, if the shooter's on the roof, he's ready to execute the shot. What is the signal needed for? I mean, just using common sense again, why the signal? Are you going to decide last minute in the middle of Charlie's debate? Oh no, he's pro this cause. He's pro this, or he's going to change his mindset and be our guy again. Like, no, the decision's already been made. As a shooter, I'm not waiting for anybody. I'm waiting for my shot. I'm going to take my breath. I'm going to make sure everything's lined up. I'm stable position, and Charlie's not moving. Boom. There's a shot. I'm not waiting for anybody. So I just don't think that as a shooter, you'd wait for an opportunity, right?
Yeah, so Dale's picked up on what you just said. What do you think of the guy who asked the last question who practiced his reaction before he was shot?
That is very, very strange. I think that is the most compelling piece of evidence, in my opinion. Again, I covered this in my video. I said there was nothing happening around this guy that would have warranted him practicing. Like, that wasn't a real reaction. That reaction that he had when the first time he did it before Charlie had even arrived, from what I could see, nobody was getting punched in the face. Nobody was throwing anything at him. Nothing was flying around the crowd to warrant him doing this, right? I think that is jitters. I think that's anxiety. Again, could it be nothing? Yeah, it could be nothing. But I think it's extremely suspect that he was doing that ahead of time. I think that's has a lot more legs to it than something like the hand signals. Also, shout out Jesse on Fire talked about this on his channel. This dude is a part of the Unfuck America tour, which is, also Destiny's a part of that. And they are very clear in their mission statement was to follow Charlie Kirk around and to essentially try to disprove him. And I mean, they literally, you can go back and watch him say it in all his own words, what they thought about Charlie Kirk. So I think that's a much more interesting avenue that has more legs to it than the hand signals.
So you've got several people are asking about your thoughts on the drone activity.
So I don't think a drone shot Charlie Kirk. There are drones that are capable of shooting bullets, but as easy of a shot that is at the alleged distances, either 140 yards, 143 yards approximately from Tyler Robinson's position, or from the position that I believe it happened at is around 56 yards, accounting for the angle. Both of those shots are very easy with a rifle, with somebody who knows how to shoot decently well, very easy in a brace position. Standing offhand, not quite as much, but in a brace position, very easy to take. Now a drone, all the drones that I've ever seen that have weapons attached to them are very large. And they're not, I don't think that they're at the point where they're able to take an accurate shot, even at 50 yards like that. Because again, the target is fairly small. Like if you're aiming for a headshot, like they were, fairly small target. And I don't think a drone would have done that. Now, are there drones there to disable comms, to mess with people's phones and their recording devices? I think we've heard from a couple sources now that several people were live streaming and their live streams cut out around that time. I think that's definitely should be looked into. There were some very strange flight patterns and some governmental capable planes in the area that dropped down to very low, 200 feet, I believe it was, which is like below FAA regulations for a manned aircraft. I think that's 400 feet. I forget which one exactly, but it was below where it should have been, and it was traveling at like stall speeds, according to the information that I've received. That is very peculiar because it happened right around the time that Charlie was shot, and those planes are capable of deploying many small drones. Again, I'm not an expert in this, so I kind of defer to the experts on this, but I would say it is very suspect, and there appears to be quite a bit of evidence that are capturing these very small drones whizzing around the area. Unless you believe Utah has some massive bugs that I have never seen before. But I think it's pretty clear there were drones.
A few people asking about the cameraman. Vincent saying, the camera that got removed so quickly, could it have been a remotely operated gun?
So there was two things hung up in the tent behind Charlie. There was a camera and there was another box just to the left of it. Candace claims, again, and if you believe Candace, what she's saying, I do. I believe Candace has good intentions. So I believe what she's telling us is true. And I know I get a lot of flack for that. People tell me all the time I shouldn't believe what Candace says, but I could see it in her face. I could hear it in her voice. People believe she's controlled opposition. I don't necessarily buy into that belief. But if Candace saw the footage and we can get into this in a second too, because she claims there was no blood in the footage, which we can talk about, but she saw it on FaceTime. She was FaceTiming this guy that she knew, the gentleman who took the camera down, who had the footage, and he showed her a screen of the footage. So not good quality by any means whatsoever to see the footage. But I don't believe that the camera can record and also shoot a projectile. Now, that box to the left of the camera that I saw, is it possible? Yeah. Like I said, anything's possible. But again, the one thing I keep going back to is the cavitation that we saw. That projectile would need to be moving pretty fast in order to create that type of cavitation, I believe around at least faster than the speed of sound. So I don't think a palm gun, I don't think a camera gun, unless it was highly sophisticated. Again, is it possible? Yes, but I think it's unlikely.
All right. So, you know, earlier on, there's a lot of different theories about him getting up and down the building, gun in the trousers, assembling, reassembling the gun. Is that just all nonsense?
I mean, there's a lot of videos out there. A guy, I forget his name, did the Mauser in the trouser, right? He recreated it and attempted to. I actually had a friend loan me one of his Mausers, and this guy is essentially he's an expert on Mausers. I would call him. He probably wouldn't call himself that, but he owns 8 of them on all different calibers. He let me borrow one. I brought it onto the channel just to kind of show the size of this rifle. I think it's, again, one of the many inconsistencies in the FBI story is that he had a Mauser in his trousers, whether it was disassembled, it had to be disassembled, but even disassembled, the stock itself is like 30 plus inches. So is the barreled action with the scope on it. I see no evidence in the photos the FBI provided that he has any of that in his pants, shirt, underneath his backpack. Any way people want to, again, do the mental jujitsu to kind of believe the narrative, I don't see that happening in any of these scenarios. Also, from what I understand, they claim he assembled it on the roof. So now you have this guy on the roof that's very well exposed, as Paramount showed us when he traveled the campus. It's very easy to get up there. Anyone on that level would have seen him up there assembling the rifle. It is a relatively easy breakdown process. It's 2 bolts that you need to unscrew to break it down, and 2 bolts you need to rescrew to put it back in. But what people don't understand is on these rifles, when you make an operation like that, when you disassemble the barreled action from the stock and you reassemble it, any hunter will tell you, you should go back and re-zero. You need to check your zero, because that can affect and shift your zero slightly, especially if the rifle is not bedded well. And it's a really old rifle. These rifles are known for having 4 MOA accuracy as a standard, 4 to 6. What that means is at 100 yards, you're shooting the gun. And if the gun is in a cinder block, it's not moving at all, and you pull that trigger 5 times, you have a 4-inch spread that bullet is allowed to go in, right? Most modern rifles have a 1 MOA guarantee from the factory saying if that same scenario happens with a modern rifle, they're going to go into a 1-inch hole. So is it possible he had an extremely, like, he just got lucky and he took it apart, put it back together? Yeah, but I don't see, again, in any of the footage in the photos that the FBI provided, anything in his pants or in his shirt. And it certainly would not fit in that backpack he was wearing.
So LW wants your thoughts on the searches before the event.
Very suspect. I would say, I think it's an avenue that needs to be explored. People are already trying to discredit this dude. I think it was Baron Coleman is the guy who's been kind of leading the charge on that. And I talked about his searches. I think it's very eye-opening. Could it be glitches? Yes. But what is the likelihood of all of these searches from all of these different terms, including addresses, the address where the rifle was found, including the tail number of the plane that was in the area that dropped down to those low levels and at stall speeds, including Tyler Robinson, including Lance Twiggs, including all of these. I haven't done the math, but probably 20 to 30 search terms that were all searched either in DC, Huntsville, or Israel before, months before the event, in some cases years before the event. Could you write that off? I think maybe 1 or 2 or even 10, but how can you write off dozens? You know what I mean? That's the part that I have trouble, again, as a rational human being. I don't know if I've said this yet, but I want to believe the narrative. It is much easier for me to combat a radicalized 20-something-year-old guy than it is to combat the deep state. I don't want to believe our government is capable of this, right? But the reality that I live in, and if you open your 2 eyes, like if you're truly awake, you see this happening time and time again. So I think it's very suspect, the searches, for sure.
Exactly, time and time again. And we're forced down our throats with these official narratives, you know, going back to the JFK assassination. And like you said earlier on, this does not preclude a patsy being present and taking a pot shot. Saran Saran was in that position. I believe Lee Harvey Oswald was in that position. And we've got the same thing here. That doesn't preclude a professional hitman or a team being present as well to finish the job, which is how they these operations go down.
I just got goosebumps, man, because you're absolutely right. Like, I'm not here to try to tell anybody that that video on the rooftop was fake. I don't know. It doesn't even matter. That doesn't matter at all. And honestly, all of this doesn't matter. The trigger man, albeit I do want him to get justice, the true trigger man, who I believe was probably a professional assassin, I want them to get justice. But what matters more is who hired him. Who are the forces behind the scenes pulling the strings to enact their draconian overreach? Like, I mean, Palantir is being implemented. They're trying to implement. You're over in the UK, correct? You got digital IDs now being mandated. I mean, the writing's on the wall. Look at, like, it doesn't even matter. It does, but it doesn't really, like, it truly overarching. The bigger issue is not who shot Charlie Kirk. It's who hired them, who orchestrated it. And look at what's playing out now after the fact, with Cash Patel talking about and the Utah governor talking about regulating free speech on the internet. Was this the ultimate goal all along? I would, based off of the evidence that I have of our government and the false flag events that we can prove, I think it's very clear that they're orchestrating this to push a Big Brother agenda.
Yeah, Louise is saying, surely they're not going to execute an innocent young man for Charlie's murder. Louise, dead men tell no tales. The quicker they can eliminate the patsy, case closed.
Absolutely.
It's in their interest to do this.
100%. And what I would say to FBI Director Cash Patel and calling everybody anarchists for pointing out clear inconsistencies in the story, things that are so hard to believe, is look, the burden of proof is not on the public. The burden of proof is on the FBI and on the prosecution to show and present enough evidence that proves that Tyler Robinson was the actual shooter. And you wouldn't need to silence anybody if you had that evidence, plain, flat, simple. You wouldn't need to silence anybody. You wouldn't need to call people out and try to dissuade people from watching regular guys talk on the internet. Like, again, I'm just a regular dude who's like, nah, screw that. I'm not gonna let this happen to Charlie Kirk, because that could have been any single one of us. Could have been cut down as far. Anybody who's a detractor, and look what they're doing. Now they're coming after the rest of us. Conveniently, because this guy was radicalized online. The youth's being radicalized online. So we need to cut that down. How convenient.
Ask yourself, how long did Lee Harvey Oswald stay alive? And how long did the guy whack him stay alive?
Exactly. 100%.
Agent Orange, has the FBI given an explanation of how a rifle of that size got on campus?
Their explanation is that he had it in his pants. And they show the footage from that house where he's like limping. Allegedly, Tyler Robinson is limping. Again, he's wearing skinny jeans. I don't know how much this kid weighs, but I know I weigh probably 120 pounds more than him. You know what I mean? I'm 6'1", 270 pounds. I couldn't conceal that rifle. I have a problem concealing a Glock 19. Like, I print with a Glock 19, dude. I carry, and I have to like wear clothes. I buy shirts a size big so that I can conceal my firearm without printing. And you got this kid wearing skinny jeans, a shirt, a pretty tight shirt, and a backpack, mind you, that's also pulling against his shirt and is going to make printing even harder to conceal. There's literally zero proof besides this guy limping on footage that they can even point to and say, well, that's how he got on campus. Also, why did he hide it? Like, right in the bushes. Like, how far was his vehicle from that? That's like the worst place. Like, how convenient. And the FBI's got high resolution photos of finding a carabiner, finding zip ties, but they don't have a high resolution photo of the rifle that they allege is used. That's very weird too.
You've got people asking about Chur glitches and holograms. Any theories there?
Okay. what was the first hologram conspiracy when Tupac was on stage? Like, what was that back in 2000? What was that? Like 2009, 2010. It was a long time ago. I forget, but people were saying Tupac's not even dead. I mean, again, I'm looking at Occam's razor. What's the simplest explanation? I think that's, again, doing a lot. Is it to say it's impossible? No, but you see a guy grab a hologram. I mean, that would need, is that guy fake too? We saw him thrown to the ground. Then we saw what people were alleging was Charlie's finger pointing up at the ceiling. We saw the guy grab his arm and swing it forward. It just looked like Charlie was pointing. Again, kind of debunking that a security team, not debunking so much, but like, I don't think that was Charlie pointing. If you watch it in full speed, you can see the guy grab his arm and it flings up. And in the moment it's paused, you can see his hand like kind of like this. But I think that there's way too much interaction with Charlie afterwards, especially, I mean, carrying him off, right? I think it's a lot more likely it was a squib, as they call it. I don't think Charlie was a hologram. I think if you're going to go down that path of Charlie's not dead, or that wasn't, you know, I think the squib is more likely. But again, I still think that's pretty unlikely given what we saw in the footage.
So Oliver's mom is wondering why there appears to be no ongoing official investigation. It seems they have a suspect, so case closed.
Yeah, so what was it, like a week or two ago, Kash Patel went on X and tweeted that they're exploring all avenues and all theories, and if there's other shooters, they're going to find them. That's since gone away. Now Kash is like going on these interviews saying how he, we have our guy, I believe, you know, and he's using very careful language, right? And again, whether you think Kash is in or, you know, knows about it, I think that they're very selective about, you know, if I was the deep state, I mean, I would be very selective about who I let in on the secret. But also, this is the same dude who said the FBI files are the Epstein files are in the FBI building. Day one, I'm going to shut down the Hoover building and turn it into a museum of the deep state. And then he gets in. I don't know what they show him, what they threaten him with, but he's a very different man now than he was before he got in. Let's just put it that way. I think it's very clear if you watch his interviews with Sean Ryan and everybody else, that I think they showed him some pretty troubling shit. I think it's the same thing they tell every president that gets in office. Same thing they tell a lot of these people who are in these positions of power that are either elected or appointed. I don't know what they have on them. Maybe they threaten their entire families. Who knows? I imagine that's what's happening.
Deborah, has anyone spoke with the witnesses yet? Haven't they put a gag order on the witnesses? Isn't that what Candace was talking about breaking?
Yeah, so I just saw yesterday one of the gentlemen who was at the assassination talked about it had been, I think, 2 or 3 weeks after the assassination before the FBI reached out to them. And I think it was after he made a video and posted it on YouTube. Candace had talked about how several people that she had spoken to received footage from, like the gentleman who saw Tyler on the roof, that one far-off shot where he stopped recording right before the shot was allegedly taken. She said that guy hadn't been, you know, she asked him if the FBI had contacted him and they hadn't at the time. Now they have a gag order on 3,000 plus witnesses. And I don't know how that extends to us. Is that extending to anybody talking about this? I know there's a lot of creators saying, we're not going to abide by the gag order. I'm like, how can they put a gag order on a random guy who wasn't there, who has nothing to do with it? All I'm doing is watching footage and talk. You can't, no, it's like we have a First Amendment in this country. You're not going to stop me from talking about something. So I don't know who the FBI has spoken to. I've only seen video proof of one guy saying he spoke to the FBI, and him and his friend who were both there gave their statements. That's the only person that I know of that has given a statement.
A few people asking about destruction of evidence at the crime scene and whether there was a trap door.
So 100%, I think that the crime scene not being encased in glass immediately and secured is the biggest tell of like a cover up. Now you could say like in the heat of the moment, in the chaos, they didn't have enough people, but the FBI arrived. I mean, how long thereafter, right? Even when they arrived, what, they put caution tape up, they still had drones flying over it. People surveilling. You had a ton of people in Charlie's security team walking around the area afterwards, looking for things. What were they looking for? I have no idea. The trap door argument, I think, is a little bit, again, we saw Charlie get carried away in multiple videos from multiple angles. A lot of eyewitnesses saw that. They have a pretty intricate waterfall system there. Just from my background, I used to work in underground waterworks. Just from my background, I know that there are a lot of vault boxes where valves are stored, piping, so on and so forth, etc. It keeps it out of the frost in an area where it gets cold, and keeps it out of sight, obviously, as well. So I personally haven't seen inside that door, but I believe that this has something to do with that waterfall, is my guess. Probably pumps, probably valves, maybe a filtration system, something like that. But again, I don't see any evidence that shows Charlie was taken out of there. Could there have been someone in there? Because that kind of sounds like what Candace may be alleging, right? Like the shot came in right here and stopped in his neck. I don't know. That's more likely than him getting stuffed in there for sure.
Dale wants to know what you think of the memorial.
It was strange. It was like, okay, I don't know. People grieve differently, right? But that was a bit strange. Everything from the State Farm Arena allegedly having been booked like since before Charlie Kirk's assassination. I don't know if that's been disproven or not, but if that's true, that's pretty unbelievable. Cause as far as I know, they hadn't announced any events there. I think it was way over the top. I think it was very strange. Fireworks. It was more like a WWE like ceremony. Like a lot of people have been making memes about that. And you know, you laugh so you don't cry, right? Like if we really took all this to heart, we'd just be depressed and never leave our houses. But you laugh because like, yeah, this is literally like, you know, the Undertaker coming out was what it was like. And for people to say, yeah, you grieve in different ways for sure. But I don't want to attack anybody. It was just strange. I'll just say that. Like I for sure, I told my wife, like, if you're acting like that after I get killed, like I'm going to tell my buddies, you're the first suspect, you know, my wife. I'm not saying anyone else's wife. So
huge thank you, man. You've answered all of the questions. I've just put your links in the live chat again. And if people are watching this on replay, they're in the description box. Please support Range Day's work. Do you have anything you'd like to say in conclusion to the viewers? What can they look forward to at your channel in the coming days?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm going to keep talking about it. People are trying to silence me. I've been attacked in every way you could imagine. I'm sure you've experienced this in the past. My channel did blow up after this event happened. So I'm experiencing a new level of a coordinated attack, in my opinion. So I'll just ask everybody to check out the channel, subscribe to the channel. I'm going to continue to cover it. I'm going to attempt to recreate what I believe the shot trajectory is with some ballistic gel dummies. I'm working on that currently. There's a lot of moving parts there. The hardest part for me is to get a high-speed camera because they're exorbitantly expensive. The Phantoms, I think, are upwards of like $40,000. So I'm trying to either rent one or find a crew. So if anybody wants to assist in that, I would love any help. But essentially, that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm also going to continue talking about my bread and butter, which is guns, the Second Amendment. But I won't be silenced. I'm not going to back down from talking about this because it's incredibly important. If I'm going to sit here and talk about freedom and the Second Amendment and how important it is to own guns and be trained and be an asset to protect your family and your loved ones and your state and your country, well, the first way to do that is civilly, with words, with debate, and with calling out blatant lies when you see it. And so I feel a moral obligation to talk about it, and everyone calling me a grifter, like you just don't know me. I had no intention of covering this. I just felt so strongly. And when the videos started to take off, I said, you know what? People are dying for this information. They're craving this information. They're not getting it. So what can I do to support this effort to find the truth? And that's all I'm trying to do.
And we salute you. Every time anything goes viral, there's always huge blowback and attacks. It's a crazy world out there.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us, man. We'd love to get you back sometime. I'm going to let you go and close the show. So you take care.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you. Phenomenal guest, folks. And thank you for all of your questions. Really helping shape the interview. Tons more content coming up. We've got Barbara, ex-model, back in 20 minutes with Paula, Em, and Ron. That's part three. I've got New York model exposes elites, Epstein, Jean-Luc Brunel, 11 a.m. tomorrow. And then it doesn't end there. We have Ron's got Gary Waterman, the ex-cop, back on tomorrow night. And then I've got Ryan Dawson, Saturday, 1 p.m. on Virginia's book, Prince Andrew Elites. And then we've got Jonathan Hayback, Saturday night, 7 p.m. with Lauren, Satanic Rituals in Hollywood. And I know a few people have put in the chat. They just saw my interview go up on Dodge Woodall's channel. Exposing Prince Andrew, talking about Virginia Epstein, etc. Thank you, Deborah. Caught your interview, Dodge. Excellent, mate. Lisa, caught your interview, Dodge. It was a great interview. If you've not seen it, Dodge is a good guy. I'm going to put it in the live chat now. I'll also put the link in the description box if you're watching this on replay. And we would appreciate it if you go over to Dodge's channel and put a comment and tell him you've come from my channel. It's just to show him that cross-pollination effect. All right, so Ron is coming on in 20 minutes with Paula M and Barbara, talking about the elites, Diddy, Epstein, etc., the modeling world. So we've got a 20-minute break until that. So I hope to see some of you then in the chat. Thanks for tuning in. Huge thank you to Range.